I get started, I want to do two things. The first thing is, no, the second thing will be questions. So think if you have questions. Meanwhile, I realized I should do something that will empower you guys. I should show you how you find the real scientific papers in physics, mathematics, and science that you try to refer to. So, it's the web page, which I mentioned there, arxiv.org. Okay, if you don't know this, if you want to see the real stuff, you go to this web page. Okay. There's different categories, astrophysics, dense matter physics, general relativity, quantum cosmology, high energy physics, experimental, etc., mathematical physics, nuclear physics, biological physics, and similarly, mathematics down there, all different kinds of mathematics, nonlinear science, computer science, biology. Okay? Now, for each one, there are papers that come out every day. You look at new in each subject. Okay? Here is a list of the papers that people finished yesterday all around the world in astronomy. Detectability of gamma ray burst iron lines by Swift, Chandra, and XMM. Okay? This is the real stuff. Gamma ray bursts are these explosions in which we don't understand it, but there is energy, huge amounts of energy coming across the whole universe, seen about once a day, a burst of gamma rays from somewhere in the universe arriving. They have these spectral lines, including iron, which were detected by these three satellites, Swift, Chandra, and XMM, which are satellites that were put in orbit to measure the gamma ray bursts. Okay? Detecting dark energy in orbit. The cosmological chameleon. Okay, these people are proposing an experiment to measure the dark energy. And if you think the dark matter is a problem, which is what I was talking about, okay, the dark energy is an even worse problem, which I might get to or might not get to. Okay. And so on. Want to see any of these papers? Let's see if there's a good one. I don't know. I don't understand what most of this stuff means either, to tell you the truth. Okay? Formation of Omega Centauri, that's some, I don't know what it is, by tidal stripping of a dwarf galaxy. Okay? You want the real stuff? This is the real stuff. Okay? You want to see the paper? You want to see the paper? You like PostScript? You hit PS, delivers it to your computer. You like PDF, it delivers it to your computer. Actually, it won't hear because they don't like us for some reason.
Right. Yeah.
Okay? So actually, which our computer people every few weeks fix, and then there's some weird thing going on between us and them. So I have to do this at home. But you can do it at home too. If you want to search for something, go to find. Okay? Search under, say, title. Okay? You want to find papers about what I've been talking about? I don't know. Black holes? Black holes. Okay, let's look at 100 hits per paper, per page. Okay. Here are all the papers about black holes. Okay? Dark energy and supermassive black holes. Environmental impact of supermassive black holes. Black holes growth by appreciation. Why the black hole, astrophysical black hole candidates are not rotating. Stability of primordial black holes. The ecology of black holes with star clusters. People are getting biological and ecological for some reason. Okay? Supermassive black holes in spiral galaxies, etc. Okay? You got it? You want to search? I was telling you about work by this guy called, I don't know, is there anybody you want to search for? Stefan. Stefan? Okay, I don't know. Jeff, Scott, do you have any papers on astral pH?
No way.
No way. Okay, but you know that Stefan has papers on astral pH. Stefan Alexander. Okay. There you are. Okay? And so on. He's writing too many papers. The amount of papers can be inverse to the amount of thoughts. So you've got to be okay. That's enough of that. Yeah. Anyway, okay? That's how we do it professionally. Those of us who are addicted, okay? We do this every night before we go to sleep. Some of us do this every morning before we wake up. Some of us, when we wake up, sorry. Some people are so addicted that wherever they are at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is where when these things are announced in papers, they are at a computer at 8 p.m. .01, and they get the list of the new papers for the day in their field. Right? There are people who do that, right?
We do.
No, I wait till the next morning. I do it over coffee in the morning. Okay? Okay, so this is publication of science is fast. Okay, this is daily. Somebody finishes a paper, they put it out, it's there the next day, can be searched, indexed, forever. Okay? And you can do it too. Okay? And if you don't understand most of it, that's okay, you can do it.
This is all free, so how is the journalist staying on?
Who knows?
Is this legal? Like, is it against?
It's perfectly legal. It's supported by the National Science Foundation. It's perfectly legal. And the journals are in deep trouble because of this. Because I'm trying to, the journals, of course, are also getting to be online. But only if I want to look at a paper written before the system was instigated, which was 1992, do I look for a journal. I have educated graduate students to a PhD who have no idea where the library is. Right? I mean, Steph, have you ever been, when's the last time you went to a library to look for a journal? I haven't gone to the library to look for a journal for about 10 years. Yeah.
Are they refereed? Or how do you know these are ready to be published? Like, who makes that call?
They're not refereed, but they're looked at. If you come from an accredited academic institution, you get through. And unless you're writing a paper whose whole purpose is to yell at somebody else and call them stupid, which something happened to me recently, and they do block that. So he had to send around his paper to all his friends saying about how stupid I was. Okay, and so they do sort of look at it to make sure it's real stuff, it's not cranky, it's not out of line. Okay, but it's otherwise unrefereed. And guess what? The quality is the same as the journals. The reliability is the same as the journals, because there's lots of stuff in refereed journals that's unreliable and full of mistakes and not true. Yeah?
So this is what in the old days would be called preprints?
Yeah. But this is it. Nobody looks at the journals. This is how science is communicated. And the advantage of this, by the way, let me emphasize also for the people who come from faraway places. Okay. It used to be that people in outside of the big centers, you know, in the United States, Canada, and Europe, were out of it because they had to wait for the journals to come by sea. Okay? Months later. So it was really hard. I know there's some people here from South Africa, I don't know where else. It was really hard to do science in those places because you would only get the journals months later. Now you're in the same situation as everybody else. You get it the next day. Okay? And that has changed the world of science. It has drawn the world of science. Because it doesn't matter. Okay? Once you're a scientist, you have your papers for a day. And that's kind of the big effect. Now, let's come back to this. You have questions. You're asking a lot of questions, which I appreciate, but I'm going to ask this if somebody else has questions. Because I'm going to ask you. somebody else has questions.
So for Brian here, you saw like the change of roles you see here.
Yeah.
So the acceleration is going to be different for this solo.
That's true. So this disagrees with the pioneer. This point is very good. The pioneer, the acceleration just seems to be constant, measured over a long period of time. This acceleration that's measured in the galaxies is different from Newton, but it's not constant. It's falling off like 1 over r rather than 1 over r squared. But it just happens numerically that the number measured here by pioneer is close to the number measured here. Now, this is 6 times bigger than this. And to give you a perspective, why I say close, okay, is in physics, orders of magnitude matter. If I measure 2 different accelerations that have nothing to do with each other, they can be off by many orders of magnitude. Okay. When there are 2 things which are the same order of magnitude, they may be related. It may be a coincidence, but it suggests there might be some simple formula, like this is this multiplied by 2 pi, or something like that. Oh, yeah.
In your sense of, like, you know, since you're a historian of physics, you can understand the whole big picture.
Oh, I'm not a historian of this space.
What sense, how significant is this to compare it to, like, you know, other developments in the last sentence?
I don't have much judgment. Because first of all, I don't generally deal with data. And secondly, the period when I've been a scientist has been an anomalous period in which nothing has worked. Okay? Fundamental theoretical physics has not, you know, matched. I don't know if people told you about that, but all these ideas like grand unified theory and string theory and quantum gravity and higher dimensions, all these things you read about in Scientific American, none of them can really work. So I don't know if my experience counts for anything. Let me say that, I can give you a minute. When I asked, I know some, first of all, this is astronomy, which is, in the last 20 years, astronomy is much more of a source of new surprises and new observations than physics. Really, astronomy and cosmology is where the action is in terms of things that are, that really drive thinking. And in astronomy and cosmology, there's lots of data, and things do tend to come and go away. So I have some astronomers, you know, who are older than me, who I ask the same question to: should I take this seriously? For example, the value of the cosmological. Have you talked about the cosmological constant? Okay. Or omega, the density of matter. Okay. The values of these things have certainly fluctuated quite a bit over the years that I've been a scientist. And there are some times that, you know, they, everybody was sure they were one thing, and then, you know, and there were people who asked, should I really trust that? Should I just hold up? But the people, when I ask about this stuff, what they say is, Mom can't be right, this formula makes no sense, A. B, they believe that there's dark matter because there are other experiments that indicate a need for dark matter, which I'll tell you about. So they believe that there's dark matter, but this formula's work for galaxies. So what they say now is it must be that the dark matter knows how to cleverly arrange itself so as if so that this formula describes how the dark matter influences the galaxies. And you're laughing, but that's what the spark, that's what the people I rely on say. Yeah?
So, I'm just curious, it seems like the grades there, between like AN, period of AN, AO, kind of, that are artificial. Do you think there's a good way of like to blend it?
Oh yeah, you can embed some function, and put some function here which goes to this, and then goes to this, so that there's some smooth extrapolation. Yeah, there is, yeah. And people invent those functions, which do exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
And if you look in the papers, there's different functions which are proposed. But the data can't tell the difference between any of those fancy things and this. So there are various proposals in the original papers about how to squeeze the... The point is that you change from this to this at the point when they're equal. You change from this to this at the point when an is equal to a0, so this is equal to this, so they smoothly fit together. But this is going to do something like this. It's going to make a break in the predictions, and you can smooth it out. And you can smooth it out. Now, I was going to tell you, any more questions? I can keep that on, I don't care. But I'm just going to use the blackboard and I'm going to point out a few things about why this is hard to believe in. One reason it's hard to believe in is that somebody mentioned looking at forces of galaxies on other galaxies. So I don't have slides to show you about this, because I only thought about talking about this 10 minutes before I got here. One can also look at galaxies moving relative to other galaxies. And in fact, galaxies tend to come in clusters of galaxies that are present with each other. And by the way, the picture, okay, stars are very far away from each other compared to their size. But galaxies are not. Galaxies are on the order of 10,000 to 100,000 light years across. That's sort of more get a sense of how big they are. Light takes between 10,000 and 100,000 years across a galaxy. Okay. But within a million light years of a galaxy, there are a bunch of galaxies. So galaxies are close together compared to how big they are. Andromeda, which is the nearest galaxy to our galaxy, is not a point in the sky, it's about as big as the moon. And you can see it from the southern hemisphere on a very, very dark night, if you know where to look. Okay. Those of you who live in the southern hemisphere can do that and might see it. Okay. Andromeda is about as big as the moon, right? Which means it's close to us compared to where it is. Please? No, it's because the Earth is oriented like this and it's that way. It's visible in the southern hemisphere. There are stars that are visible only in the southern hemisphere because their axis of the Earth wobbles a little bit but points basically in the same direction. Am I?
Are you talking about the Mars Magellanic Cloud?
Oh, you're right. You're right and I'm wrong. Thank you. Okay. The large metallic cloud is close to there. You can see it from the southern hemisphere. Thank you. Good. I told you not to press it. When people look at clusters of galaxies and use Newton's laws to figure out how they should be rotating with respect to each other, moving around each other, Newton's laws don't work there either. But theories of dark matter do work pretty well to account for that. There are also things looking, there are theories which explain pretty well the observed cosmic microwave background radiation that use dark matter. I don't have time to explain that to you, and that's very indirect in any case, but there are reasons having to do with explaining what the cosmic microwave background radiation looks like that means dark matter. Finally, according to Einstein's theory, light is bent by mass. And so matter acts as a lens. It will bend light. And that effect can be measured. If you look at a star, at a distant galaxy, behind the galaxy, the distant galaxy is distorted due to the galaxy that the light passes through, just as if there was a lens there. And from that effect, you can measure the amount of matter in the galaxy. And from that effect, you find that you need 5 to 6 times more matter in each galaxy than you see in starlight. So there's a lot of indirect evidence that there is dark matter at the scale above galaxies. Now, if you can come back from the other side, you can say, well, the law of gravity is so different, why should I believe any of that? Okay? And then if you can come back from the other side and say, well, you think you're so blue, okay, tell me how this fits into general relativity and whether, you know, your theory tells you how light should be bent by gravity. Okay? And so there's a big dispute that goes on. Okay? But so far, almost everybody believes that there's dark matter. Of course, that doesn't mean that they're right. Afro, do you all know who Richard Feynman is? Or was? Okay. One of his quotes that I like is that science is the organized skepticism and the reliability of expert opinion. Should I say that again?
Yeah.
Science is the organized skepticism in the reliability of expert opinion. Okay. So maybe the experts are wrong, but most of the experts believe in dark matter, and believe that this is a fluke, what I'm telling you. Okay? But I'm going to get there. Let me tell you two reasons why this law doesn't make any sense. Okay? One of them is Newton's second law. Newton's second law says that if I have two objects, a big mass and a little mass, mass one, the big mass feels a force, a big force. Okay? The little mass feels a force, a little force. And Newton's second law says that the forces are equal and opposite. And that works with Newton's law because it's the product of both the masses. Each one, their accelerations are different, but each one feels the same force, which is the product of their masses. Okay? So Newton's second law works. Newton's second law won't work here because you can find a situation where the acceleration of one star will be bigger than A0, and you should apply this law, and the acceleration of the other star will be less than A0, and you should apply this law. Therefore, the forces, which are the masses times the accelerations, will be different. So Newton's second law doesn't work, if this is true. And therefore, conservation of momentum doesn't work. Okay? So you got a problem. On the other hand, this is observed. Okay. But I kind of believe in conservation of momentum. Okay, so we got a problem here. That's one. Let me tell you another problem. Okay. One of the things that I like, which I learned in high school, even though I love physics and dropped out of high school, but that's another story. Maybe. is about lines of force, right? Do you remember these pictures with lines of force? Okay. Fields, yeah. So field means there's a line of force is okay. And you can think about the source of gravity and mass as there being lines of force that come out of it. Okay. And if you want to know what's the force over here, well, you know, there's some lines of force, you've got a little surface here, and there's some lines of force coming through it. Okay. And you want to know what the force is doing, well, that's easy. okay? Because the force has to do with the flux of the lines of force through some surface. Okay? And the surface, the area of the surface, is going like r squared, right? The area of the sphere is going like r squared. So if the lines of force are going through all the surfaces, the sort of number of lines of force available at any point is falling off like 1 over r squared. Right? Just think of, imagine that you get pulled because you get, there's some lines of force which act on you. And just use this simple geometrical picture, the force is falling off, okay, because the lines of force are spreading out. And that suggests if the force times the area is constant, because there's a sort of just, the force comes from fluxes of lines of force, then the area growing like r squared implies that the force should go like 1 over r squared. Now, if the force is falling like 1 over r, that means there's new lines of force, right, that are here, that are not here. Think of two spheres. There's one here, and there's one here. Okay? If the force is falling like 1 over r squared, that just means that the lines of force are going continuously. If the force is falling slower than 1 over r squared, 1 over r is slower than 1 over r squared, because r is big, right? So a force proportional 1 over r at a large r is bigger than a force proportional 1 over r squared. There's more force than there should be. That means there's more field lines, there's more lines of force, which means that there's some lines of force that start somewhere. Okay. Now, it happens in Newton's physics and in the generalizations like general relativity, okay, that you can use this lines of force picture. You really can. Okay. And if you happen to know about it, there's a theorem called Gauss's law, which is behind this, which tells you that the force times the area is always a constant. So, if the force is flowing off slower than 1 over r squared, there's new lines of force that come from nowhere. Yeah? Yeah, so one explanation is, well, that's nothing new. There's just some particles here, which are dark, which are the origin of those lines of forces. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I thought maybe because the space is not three-dimensional, but the left.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, and this is the way people start to think. Maybe really, after all, we're talking about phenomena in a disk, right? Well, this is observed in disk galaxies, so maybe the lines of force don't go out spherically, but they get brought back down to the disk. Right? Okay, yeah, that's creepy. Okay. One possible thing is, yes, it's dark matter, so of course the dark matter is the origin of the lines of force. And then people get really wild. Like, there's the thing about the lower dimensional that really, somehow the lines of force are getting confined to the disk and they're getting pulled down to the disk, okay, by some nonlinear effect. Bad people have that idea, and then you can go on, you know, the webpage I told you about, find people proposing that. Okay. There's also the possibility that, paradoxically, and you can find people saying this, there are more than three dimensions. What's happening is that there's some lines of force that start out here, go up in an extra dimension, and come down here. Right, step on my line, there are people with that idea. Okay. And they claim that this is evidence that there are higher, you know, there are people who think that there are higher dimensions. Which one?
In New York.
The higher dimensions?
Yeah.
New York. I got contacts in New York, but I didn't want to do this. You got comfortable.
I'm very good. I don't want to encourage you.
Okay. So anyway, there are people who have said that this may be evidence for a higher dimension. The lines of force go up in the extra dimensions, but then they get attracted down to the three-dimensional world where the matter lives, so they bend around in that higher dimensional world and re-enter it somewhere. And that picture is almost the same that has another crazy idea, which is that, well, okay, maybe space has lots of little tunnels in it or something. Why assume that space has a nice, simple topology? Okay, this is an old idea of Johnny Wheeler, okay, who was a great physicist, still alive, which is, in general, typically space can curve. Somebody mentioned warping space. Okay, so maybe there's a little tunnel that does that. In other words, you know, like in science fiction, like in Star Trek, you can go that way, you can go that way. And some lines of force go through there. Maybe you don't even need the tunnel. Maybe there's just, you know, just if I take a piece of paper, okay, I can just, here's a piece of paper, maybe I can just fold it so that two points are actually connected to each other somewhere. And look far apart on a piece of paper, but if you can see in the higher dimensions, secretly they're touching. The lines, of course, go from right to there, from here to there. Okay? Yeah.
It would also be like that space has an underlying curvature. Like, so if I see the planetary mass, that might be like a bowl. So that, like, they have all, maybe a slight attraction between, like, all points on it.
Yeah, but that just saying it's curves-wise isn't good enough. Because this is a big effect. This is not some small effect. So you've got to be more drastic than just this little curvature. So the relationship between the radius and the area is not... Yeah, if space was warped, the area of the surface would not be exactly proportional to R-squared. That's true. Okay. But you got to warp it quite a bit to get it to go proportional to R. That you got to do something like what somebody suggested to make it as if it was two-dimensional. So, because nobody knows the answer, there's all these ideas I talked about, there are papers about. There you can find where people try to understand this phenomenon in terms of all these ideas. But so far, the one which most, I just have to say this for responsibility so that I don't get too fired or whatever happens, okay? You should know that most good, responsible astronomers and physicists believe that there's dark matter and that's where the extra lines of force come from. The problem is why the dark matter should arrange itself like this. Nobody knows, and by the way, people, of course, have studied it, and they make computer models of the dark matter and raise assumptions about the dark matter, and they don't get this to come out so far. But the great advantage, and I'm going to tell you why science is hard, the great advantage of theorizing about dark matter is that it's dark. So you can attribute any property to it you need to make your theory work. Right? If you need the dark matter to interact, that is the dark matter that doesn't see, there's no light in the dark matter, so we can't actually see how it's distributed. It's not ordinary matter, so we don't know the laws it's obeyed. So if you want to invent some special forces of repulsion by which the dark matter particles, whatever they are, repulse each other, such that in exactly the right way, this relation is true, you can do that.
Yeah.
There are many theories about what dark matter is made out of. I'll give you a short list. Okay, I have a list. There is, first of all, stuff which is made of ordinary, we say gases, that's protons, neutrons, stuff like that, okay, but is very dark. Okay. Jupiter. lots of things that started out to perform the way stars perform, but were too small to shine. So there's a whole process we have to think about how stars are formed when clouds of gas and dust get refrigerated, because they have a lot of carbon and oxygen in them. They cool down, and those very cool regions develop clumps that grow and so forth, and you get big enough to burn a nuclear fusion. But maybe a whole lot of it never gets big enough to burn. So you get sort of things which are like the size of Jupiter, so anyway, smaller than the smallest stars. And it's just very dark. Stuff like that. Black holes. Neutron stars which don't die and have seas rotating, so they may be very old neutron stars. So there's also ordinary stuff like that. There are good reasons why people believe the amount of dark matter you need could not be explained by that kind of stuff, but it's really open. So there are such things. Also, very, very cold gas, which is too cold to see, because it doesn't give off any heat. Or very, very hot gas, which is so hot to diffuse it doesn't give off much light. There's all kinds of such possibilities like that, and people investigate them. For example, using that effect of gravitational lensing, there are several experiments where they use the effect that if that's a star and it's shining, if something which was like a dark star passed in front of it, okay, the effect of gravity acting like the lens would make it appear brighter. So what you can do is every night you can measure the brightness of 10 million stars in the nearby galaxies, the Large Magellan Cloud. We can measure the brightness of 10 million stars every night with automated telescopes and look for stars that are brightening. Now, of course, there's lots of stars that on their own are unstable or variable or have fluctuating light. So once you see the candidates, you've got to look at each one and show that it's not one of those times. And when you're done, there are a few candidates left over where it looks like something is being passed in front of the star. And so you know that there is probably some dark matter, which is sort of planet size or star size. But you don't get it, you don't see enough of it to account for the location of Earth, the galaxy. So that's sort of the ordinary stuff. Another thing which is hypothetical, which is a little bit just slightly more hypothetical, but still we know it exists, is neutrinos. And we know from recent experiments, mostly at the Snow Observatory up here in Sudbury, for those who are not from here, that's in Canada, we know from experiments at that observatory that neutrinos actually have mass. And some of the dark matter, or all of it, could be neutrinos left over created in the Big Bang. Turns out that doesn't work very well to actually explain what's seen when people actually model the detail, but some of it is neutrinos. Then there could be particles, which are fundamental particles that are uncharged, so they give off no light, and stable, that we haven't observed yet. And in various theories of the unification of physics, like grand unifying theories or supersymmetric theories, okay, these are kinds of theories, okay, there are predictions for such particles, which will have no charge, so they give up no light, and are stable and heavy, so we wouldn't see them yet in accelerators. And those are called weakly interacting massive particles, or WISPs. And because they would interact through the weak interactions. And there are many experiments that have looked into them. So far, there's one experiment in Rome, actually not in Rome, under the group of people who are in Rome. It's in Gran Sasso, under Gran Sasso, which is a mountain. There is an experiment, which is a crystal which is cooled down. And they just look for absorptions of these particles to keep the crystal up. and it's measured the temperature of this crystal. And what they've seen is a fluctuation, an annual fluctuation in this temperature in this crystal. It's a little bit warmer and it's a little bit cooler. I don't really remember if it's warmer in the summer or cooler in the summer. But the crystal fluctuates the temperature with an annual variation. And they take that to be that the Earth moving around the Sun has different speeds through the dark matter and would absorb more when it's moving towards the dark matter and less when it's moving away from it. And they claim that they've taken into account all the other factors like the force towards dragging through the tunnel during the summer and the winter and stuff like that. And they're good scientists and it's a very hard measurement. Unfortunately, so for WADA, the variable distance, unfortunately, other experiments have tried, other people try to repeat that experiment or do other experiments which would measure the kind of detected kind of particles that that would be sensitive to and came up negative. So the experimental situation for those weakly interacting mass of particles is confused. But so far, there's no firm. I mean, this stuff is, the atmospheric stuff is really hard to do. So it's plausible. And it's plausible for two reasons. One of them is we don't know everything, so there easily could be such particles that we don't know. But even beyond that, there's some ideas about how to unify physics which are plausible for other reasons which predict such particles. Which you can give more or less weight to small hypothetical. But in any case, there's a lot of work done to predict what properties they should have on the basis of those conjectural theories. So it's a big subject. And it would be wonderful, I mean, if this is dark matter, what these things mean? So this experiment, for example, that shows that the velocity to the fourth power is proportional to the light, therefore to the visible matter, is very hard to explain on the basis of just saying that the dark matter are particles that don't interact with themselves. On the basis of those models, it turns out you get a relation like this, which is not as accurate, and you get something more like the second power rather than the fourth power. I'm not going to tell you why. So there is, if the reason is dark matter, then this turns out to imply that the dark matter actually probably repels itself. There's some unknown force in addition to the forces we know by which the dark matter is mutually repulsive. And that's an interesting clue. And more questions, please? I'm going to tell you one more thing and then I'm going to sum up. Okay? When you get anomalies like this, they could be coincidences or they could mean something. And you look for anything that they connect to. You look for anything that they connect to. Now, I didn't tell you about the dark energy, which is even more of a mystery than the dark matter. But when you get to scales of billions of light years, Newton's law or its extension of Einstein's equation, Einstein's theory of gravity, doesn't work either. And you have to act not just dark matter, but this thing called dark energy. And roughly speaking, what we mean by dark energy is that it has pressure. It has a very weird form of mass in which the pressure is negative, and the pressure is the same order of magnitude as the energy density. Whereas usually energy density, energy is like mass times the speed of light squared, and pressure is sort of like mass times the velocity of things. So for the pressure, first of all, to be negative is bizarre, and secondly, for pressure to be on the same scale as the energy density means that we're talking about stuff where if there's anything moving, it's moving at the speed of light. So we don't know what the dark energy is. There's much more to say about it, but I'm aware of it, that you all want to take a brain and have conscious stuff. But if you measure the energy density of this dark energy, and there's a constant called the cosmological constant, lambda, which is by now a measured constant, which is a measure of this still mysterious stuff. But this has nothing to do with galaxies. This is measured on scales of billions of light years, whereas the galaxy is like 10,000 light years. Okay? So we're talking about very, very different scales. But it turns out that to within experimental accuracy, A0 is the square root of that number, cosmological constant, and the speed of light square over 3. We have no idea why that could be true. And no theory of dark matter or modifying these equations has any idea why that's true. There is not one paper in that archive of papers that proposes a sensible idea that I've read and I've looked for about why this might be true. So it might be a coincidence. But if it's not a coincidence, it suggests that the mystery of this dark energy is related to the mystery of the dark matter. And that's interesting, because since all the stuff is dark, we don't see, we don't have much. Okay. Now, let me just sum up. This is stuff, oh wow, I thought I was talking to something. This is stuff which, as I started off saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry. I don't care. If there are questions, maybe this is the switch. Oh, I see. It's not. Okay. So now you know what a theoretical means. We're at the plug just computer. Plug. Not plugged into action yet. Okay. What I said I would do when I started is tell you about what I worry about. By the way, John here, I don't know if you all know John, it's John, who also worries about this stuff. I mean, we've been talking about bonds and dark matter and dark energy. And
I've told him about my theory.
I have not. Okay, John, who is a very distinguished scientist here, has a theory that this is data.
We're not 100% certain yet.
Anyway, there was certainly for sure is the new cause plus the matter that we see fails on scales of galaxies and larger than galaxies and fails badly. We're not talking about little small effects. We're not talking about it kind of works, and then there's some, you know, one part per million effect you have to account for, which is how relativity happened at first. Okay. Newton's laws plus the matter that we see in stars and galaxies fails by a factor of 5 to 10 on the scales of galaxies and fails by a factor of 30 or 40 on the scale of the attractions between galaxies. So there's one of two possibilities. Either most of the matter in the universe is dark, is not ordinary matter. Okay. How much? By the way, I'll tell you how much. Putting everything together from the data, okay, protons, neutrons, and electrons make up about 4 to 6% of the matter and energy in the universe. Protons, neutrons, electrons, light, neutrinos, Now let me dig into this up. The protons, neutrons, electrons, fire make up 4 to 6% of the matter in the universe, assuming that Newton's laws are true. Okay. And the rest of it is stuff that we do not know what it is. Or Newton's laws are not true at scales of the sizes of galaxies, of thousands of tens to hundreds of thousands of light years. Okay. And they're not slightly false, they're off by factors of 10. Okay. That's the situation. There are, and I thank you for that question, there are a lot of proposals about what the dark matter could be. There's also a proposal for what the law could be if there's a change in these laws. And there are also, I told you that it's hard to make sense of this because of Newton's second law and because of flux lines and electric field lines. There are people, there are various ideas that solve those problems, and John's one of them. I should say that John's theory is a theory that accounts for those problems I talked about. And there are others. Some of them are completely crazy, like there are higher dimensions or wormholes where the flux lines are jumping through, so that there's not all not going on one of our squares. Some of them are more sensible. The situation is completely confused. Completely confused. It's not that the laws of nature and the contents of the universe are known, and there's nothing for you guys to do but, you know, put some fine print in. Okay? Either we do not know the law of gravity, okay, or we do not know what 95% of the stuff is. Okay, I'll stop there.